A. From Washington, this is Daybreak Asia. Good morning, I'm Jim Stevenson. Coming up, Hong Kong activists block government building as protester numbers decline. Beijing warns Hong Kong protesters as authorities crack down at home. Imagine cleaning an entire nation. India's prime minister does. These stories and more in this Friday edition of VOA's Daybreak Asia. Hong Kong's chief executive says he is not resigning his position following repeated calls by pro-democracy protesters for him to step down. Leung Chun-ying made the announcement just before a deadline for him to step down at midnight Thursday local time, but he said he is sending his chief secretary to meet with student protesters who had issued the deadline. Leung said student protesters had sent a letter to him several hours before the deadline requesting the meeting. He asked for calm and a structured approach in the run-up to the 2017 elections.
I appeal, and I've been appealing, to protesters that we should all follow the basic law, which was promulgated 20-something years ago. We should work within the framework of decision of the National People's Congress, Standing Committee, and so on and so forth. Only do we follow the provision of basic law and the decisions of the NPCSC can we have universal suffrage in 2017.
The protesters had threatened to take over some government buildings if Leung refused to resign by midnight Thursday. Storming government buildings would mark a major escalation in the protests, and authorities have warned of serious consequences if the demonstrators try to do so. VOA's Brian Padden is in Hong Kong and reports the crowds of pro-democracy supporters occupying downtown thinned out significantly Thursday. He adds as activists try to maintain pressure on the government to give in to their demands, the question becomes whether large numbers of people continue to participate or will public support dwindle over time.
Some pro-democracy activists in Hong Kong are now trying to block the entrance to the chief executive's office building. Some of the umbrella movement leaders say they plan to increasingly disrupt government functions until China agrees not to interfere in Hong Kong elections. Mio Chang is president of the Hong Kong Baptist University Students Union.
It's what we are planning is to show, is to give the pressure to the government. And it's a necessary thing there during the process.
Hong Kong police cracked down on protesters earlier in the week, but authorities have since backed off, allowing crowds to mass in hopes they will eventually disperse on their own. In the city center at midday Thursday, crowds are sparse compared to the day before. Supporters say the numbers will increase as the day goes on. Those that are on the street remain committed. Many people like Ruby Yi-Ung show their support by posting messages on a wall.
We just wrote, we support the real democracy and we defend the freedom of speech. Yeah, and we support Hong Kong.
Some Hong Kong residents who are not participating in the protests see the movement as democracy in action. Cassie Leung, a 16-year-old student, came with her family.
This is a really good practice for me to learn what is happening in Hong Kong, and this has successfully aroused my social awareness in not only on democratic movement like Occupy Central, but probably on other social movements.
But keeping public awareness and support high and motivating large numbers of supporters to continue to occupy Hong Kong appears to be the key challenge for pro-democracy activists in the days ahead. Brian Padden, VOA News, Hong Kong.
China's central government, meanwhile, is warning of chaos and severe consequences if the pro-democracy protests continue in Hong Kong. Shannon Van Sant reports from Beijing on measures taken by the Chinese government to stop the protests from spreading to the mainland.
The Hong Kong government is warning protesters to not occupy government buildings, and China says the demonstrators are bringing chaos to Hong Kong. The admonitions come after China reportedly arrested more than 20 people in the mainland who took actions in support of the Hong Kong protest for democracy. William Ni is a China researcher at Amnesty International, which issued a report on the detentions.
It seems like there's a lot of people who are being detained. ostensibly for showing support for the demonstrations in Hong Kong.
Amnesty said China arrested people in several cities, including Beijing, Shenzhen, Guangzhou, and in Jiangsu province. Those arrested expressed support online for the protest, attempted to travel to Hong Kong to participate in the demonstrations, or shaved their head as part of a Go Bald for Hong Kong campaign on the mainland. The arrest follows several days of high levels of censorship by the Chinese government. China has banned all photos of the protest from being shared online and blocked the image sharing service Instagram last weekend. News reports of the protest have also been heavily censored. Protesters in Hong Kong reject Beijing's proposed plan for the 2017 election of the city's chief executive. The plan would allow only people to vote for candidates who are selected by a committee made up of pro-Beijing loyalists. Protesters say they should be allowed to choose the nominees for their city leader directly. In an editorial in the Chinese government-run People's Daily newspaper, China said protesters will drag Hong Kong into chaos. The front-page commentary went on to say that the demonstrators have flagrantly violated the laws and regulations of Hong Kong, severely obstructed traffic, and disrupted social order. Human rights advocates say it is precisely the heavy-handed tactics used by the Chinese government to suppress dissent that has fueled the protest. Activists such as Amnesty International's William Nee say attempts by China to restrict freedom of speech and the press in Hong Kong, as well as a growing gap between rich and poor, will continue to inspire demonstrations even if the current protests fizzle.
In the long run, because the central government seems unwilling to compromise and the young people of Hong Kong seem very determined to fight for their rights, that most likely confrontations and discussions about Hong Kong's political future will continues to be very intense.
China's current leadership under President Xi Jinping has taken a hard line on political dissent or criticism from activists. Under Xi, authorities have maintained strict state censorship policies, imposed heavy-handed security in areas of ethnic unrest, and rounded up scores of dissidents and legal activists. Shannon Van Sant for VOA News, Beijing.
There's much more on the events in Hong Kong at voanews.com. And coming up on two programs you'll want to hear, International Edition and China Focus. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi has launched a massive nationwide cleanliness drive to spruce up the country and provide toilets to all households by 2019. As Anjana Pasricha reports from New Delhi, the challenge will be daunting in a country whose sprawling cities often overflow with garbage due to poor waste disposal systems and where more than half the population does not have access to toilets.
Prime Minister Narendra Modi literally wielded the broom Thursday in a poor colony housing sanitation workers in New Delhi before administering a pledge to tens of thousands of school children and government officials to spend 2 hours every week in cleaning up the country. He asked people to make a beginning with themselves, their families, neighborhoods, workplaces, and villages. Ministers, lawmakers, and school principals also picked up brooms and trash cans to sweep streets and clear garbage to raise public awareness of better sanitation in a country where littering is common and where cleaning is considered a task to be done by lower castes. Mr. Modi urged India's 1.25 billion people to turn the drive into a social campaign.
Purani aadaton ko badalne ke liye bahut samay lagta hai.
He said it takes time to change old mindsets and habits and is a tough task. But if everyone joins hands to make it a mass movement, then India too will be counted among the world's clean countries. Mr. Modi launched the Clean India campaign on the birth anniversary of Indian independence leader Mohandas Karamchand Gandhi. Gandhi had called good sanitation more important than independence and urged his disciples to clean latrines to remove the stigma from a task traditionally assigned to lower castes. Besides cleanliness, a major focus of the campaign will be to build toilets. More than half of India defecates in the open, which not only spreads diseases like diarrhea, but also exposes women to the risk of sexual assault when they go into the fields after dark. A World Bank study estimated that poor sanitation could be costing India $54 billion in treatments for illnesses, early deaths, and lost productivity. No one questioned the campaign's need in a country where poor urban planning means that sewage often flows into rivers and lakes and huge garbage dumps are a sore sight in rapidly expanding towns and cities. A former minister once remarked that if there was a Nobel Prize for dirt and filth, India would win it. But skeptics are questioning how the government will achieve the Prime Minister's target of cleaning up India and providing toilets to all households by 2019, the 150th birth anniversary of Gandhi. They point to the complexity of the challenge. For example, building toilets is not the only problem. In rural India, there is often huge resistance to using them, partly due to age-old cultural associations of latrines in or near the home with ritual impurity. A study led by Diane Coffey, a visiting researcher from Princeton University, showed that 40% of 23,000 households surveyed in North India reported that even in homes with a latrine, at least one member preferred to use the fields. Speaking to VOA from the rural Sitapur district in Uttar Pradesh, where she is working, Coffey called this a wake-up statistic.
Open defecation, you know, unlike in other places where it has a negative connotation, here it's something that's completely normal and even in some sense wholesome, like the fact that you've gone for a morning walk and you've exercised your body and you've gotten up early. These are all signs of vigor and strength.
However, Prime Minister Modi sounds optimistic. He has roped in India's icons, Bollywood and cricket stars, into the cleanliness campaign. And he's asking people to upload videos and photos of them cleaning garbage on social media in a bid to spread the message. But there were some murmurs of resentment from officials about having to pick up brooms and dusters on a day that was meant to kickstart a long holiday weekend. Gandhi's birth anniversary is a national holiday in India. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
This is Daybreak Asia. Vietnam's Deputy Prime Minister and Foreign Minister Pham Binh Minh says nearly 20 years after the two countries normalized relations, it is time to end what he calls the abnormal U.S. arms embargo on its former enemy. VOA's Victor Beatty reports Minh, in a rare foreign policy statement, also warned the Asia-Pacific region faces an unprecedented risk of military conflict over territorial disputes.
Speaking in New York Wednesday at the Asia Society on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly session, Minh says in light of last year's comprehensive partnership agreement, bilateral relations between Washington and Hanoi are normal.
And the ban on the lethal weapons to Vietnam is abnormal. So you lift the ban, meaning that the relation is normal.
Asked if lifting the ban might anger China, Minh responded no.
If we do not buy weapons from the United States, we still buy weapons from other countries. So why? China bothered about that.
Senior Obama administration officials are quoted as saying discussions on easing the embargo are taking place in Washington and could result in a decision by the end of the year. Centers for Strategic and International Studies China expert Bonnie Glazer, who attended Minh's address, says she believes an end to the embargo is near.
There is support from key members of Congress. There is a sense in the executive branch that this is a legacy of a past period in U.S.-Vietnam relations, that it's time to normalize that particular aspect of the U.S.-Vietnam relationship. And from the remarks of the Deputy Prime Minister, he too seemed to think that this would simply signify movement away from what has been an abnormal to a more normal relationship.
Glazer says his comment about China's potential objections suggests Hanoi would be able to withstand criticism from Beijing and not be concerned about it. She says such weapons would enhance maritime domain awareness, giving Vietnam the ability to know what's going on in its exclusive economic zone and its airspace. Minh warns strategic distrust among major powers is rising, and the security environment has worsened as a result of what he calls unchecked unilateralism, military modernization, in arms buildup, as well as maritime and territorial disputes.
Never before have we seen a greater risk for miscalculation and incidents that might escalate into military conflicts as in the past few months.
The Vietnamese official says the Asia-Pacific region should be one of peace and dynamic development, where international law and regional codes of conduct are respected. Although major powers should bear the greatest responsibility for peace and security in the region, Min says Vietnam can contribute through greater economic reform and playing a more proactive role within the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, ASEAN.
And Vietnam will be more responsible to ASEAN. And Vietnam will also join other ASEAN members to make sure that ASEAN will be at the center of the Asia-Pacific security architecture.
Carnegie Endowment for International Peace Southeast Asia analyst Vikram Nehru, who also attended the meeting, says Min acknowledged, despite Vietnam's close political and economic ties with China, Hanoi's dispute with Beijing over the South China Sea remains a serious irritant.
Resolution of the South China Sea problem should be through the use of international law, should be through peaceful means, and should be done in a way that was multilateral in nature.
City University of Hong Kong Vietnam analyst Jonathan London says by promoting a peaceful resolution of its territorial disputes with China through ASEAN, Hanoi is not just trying to manage an extraordinarily complicated situation, but it is also underscoring its refusal to be subject to external pressures. Victor Beatty, VOA News, Washington.
A Washington-based research organization says North Korea has completed a major upgrade to its main rocket launch site. The U.S.-Korea Institute says the overhaul of the Sohae satellite launch station is likely meant to accommodate larger rockets. The findings were based on commercial satellite photos and published on the Institute's popular 38 North website. The report says there's no evidence of an imminent rocket launch. Pyongyang received international condemnation in 2012 after sending a satellite into orbit. The Institute says the North is believed to be developing a much larger rocket, perhaps operational years from now. North Korea insists its rocket program is peaceful despite repeated threats of nuclear war against South Korea, Japan, and the United States. North Korea is banned under United Nations sanctions from conducting ballistic missile and nuclear tests. We head out to the movie theaters, where keeping tradition alive in an ever-changing and complicated world is not easy. But there is at least one person whose contribution proves you can do it. VOA's Ray Kugel tells us about a documentary that looks at the amazing story of a Chinese man who, in his own way, has enriched America and the world.
His name is Pui Chan, a kung fu grandmaster of the Wallum Chinese martial arts system. He is a diminutive man whose size and agility helped him overcome very humble beginnings under political repression in the small village of Shajing in Guangdong, China, to a life of recognition and global influence. A new biographical documentary called Pui Chan, Kung Fu Pioneer, details his remarkable journey of adventure and dedication that's the stuff of novels. Pui Chan was born in 1938. At the age of six, he became the youngest pupil of Master Li Quanshan. Chan was the smallest student, about 3 feet tall, but blessed with amazing flexibility, he became the master's final disciple at just 10 years old. Hardships under the Chinese Communist regime later forced Chan, at the age of 19, to escape to Hong Kong. He used his talents as an oyster diver to fool the authorities and sail off with a government boat. Chan found work as a seaman aboard a cargo ship and never stopped practicing his kung fu skills. Chan's travels eventually took him to New York in 1968, but immigration authorities refused him a visa to come ashore. Bribing a watchman with whiskey, Chan lowered himself off a ship with everything he owned in a small plastic bag and just $24. He swam over a mile to a pier near Newark Airport in New Jersey and eventually took a cab to Chinatown in New York. Chan met with an uncle who helped him contact his older brother in Boston. That's where Chan set up the first Wallum Kung Fu School 4 years later.
We saw the United States as the place where everybody goes, you know, to live that American dream.
It's the only country that you can be like a nobody, and if you work hard, you will be successful.
Marriage and a young family ultimately took him to Orlando, Florida, where in 1980, he set up the first Wallum Kung Fu Temple in America. It now has affiliates around the world. Mimi Chan directed the movie about her father, Pui Chan, Kung Fu pioneer. As a first-generation Chinese-American, she is also a major part of her father's legacy. I asked Chan about the motivation to take on such a personal project.
I've always had it in the back of my head to make a film about my dad. I always wanted to make a film about his life because I wanted to share all of the things that he's been through and gone through to bring Kung Fu to the USA. And I just find his life and his story just so inspiring that I hope to inspire others as well.
Was it hard to be objective while you were making the movie?
Yes and no. So in terms of being objective, I think the hardest part was in the editing room on what I found really important and what I thought a general viewer would find important, because obviously it's my father. So to me, all of it is fascinating. All of it is interesting. All of it is relevant. But as a filmmaker, the most challenging part was kind of putting my personal feelings and my personal viewpoints aside. Obviously, my niche is very geared to maybe a lot of people who have an interest in martial arts already have heard of my father. But beyond that, I thought that this story and his life would be equally as interesting to people who are not martial artists. So I wanted to kind of separate that, and that was probably the most difficult part.
How would you define the Wollum style of Kung Fu and how it's different from others?
The Wollum Kung Fu system is a traditional northern Kung Fu style. And what defines it is a lot of the emphasis on leg movement and the fluidity. And it's very acrobatic, lots of kicks in a physical sense.
Did your father have some kind of divine insight to come up with the idea for a Wollum temple in Florida?
He shared with me on his journey to make a better life for himself and to escape China and escape Hong Kong, escape the ship life and start anew. I know that he attributes a lot of his success and his mentality and the strength that he had to do all those things to his Kung Fu training. So to best honor what he learned with his training and his master and his style and that tradition, I think it was always in his head that he wanted to have a place dedicated to that.
Why is the health and spirituality of Kung Fu not so well known here in the United States and perhaps other countries around the world?
I think that Kung Fu finally got its start with Bruce Lee, honestly, you know, with entertainment and people realizing that it was not the same thing as karate. It's just kind of a slow startup educating the people in America as to the benefits of Kung Fu, that it's not just a fighting form and it's not just punching and kicking, that there is greater health to it and, of course, spirituality.
What would you say is the overall message of the movie?
The message I wanted everyone to get out of the film more than anything was the inspiration of, if you work hard, if you have a dream, you can be successful, you can accomplish anything the way my father did. So I really wanted people to leave the film just feeling inspired to achieve what they wanted to and learn that hard work and perseverance does pay off, that you can do all the things that you're supposed to do and have everything come to fruition.
Chan's documentary is a profile of a man who was a true example of patience, determination, and courage. With archival photos, films, and interviews, Pui Chan's prowess is on display. Skills he still practices now at the age of 75. Mimi Chan is a proud daughter who's made a movie about dreams coming true. Her father is proof that a great American success story can start on the other side of the world. I'm Ray Kugel.
And Ray Kugel tells us that if you'd like more information, you can go to the website. It's puichan.com. That's P-U-I-C-H-A-N. You may also want to have more information on the latest developments from Hong Kong. It's on our website at voanews.com. Coming up on our program, China Focus, and next on International Edition with Steve Norman. I'm Jim Stevenson. Thanks for joining us today on Daybreak Asia.
To really understand what's happening today, take a look at what happened yesterday.
Flash, Washington.
The White House announces Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor.
That's one small step for man.
I have a dream.
The Beatles.
The presidential car coming up now. We know it's the presidential car. You see Mrs. Kennedy's pink suit. There's a Secret Service man, spread eagle, over the top of the car.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Listen to Today in History, weekdays on the Voice of America, following International